Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And today we're going to be talking to a falconer. So when you look up to the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane. No, wait a minute. It is a bird. That's right. Miami is being invaded by common grackles, seagulls, crows, starlings. Many South Floridians are turning to a superhero who's actually a bird, and it's a falcon by the name of Chop. And Chop's handler is Neil Ottaway, and Neil is a falconer. Neil and Chop have the mission of scaring annoying birds away from various properties in South Florida. And to explain his interesting work, joining us now here, lying on the beach, is Neil Ottaway. Neil, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
I had the unique experience of meeting with you because my building in South Florida has we've got a zillion grackles who come in attack us every night around 6 o'clock. And we were looking for a green solution where we didn't have to kill the birds, but at the same time, we didn't want the birds. And we found out about you. And this is what you kind of explain to people how it works. Kind of walk us through what being a falconer is all about.
Okay. First of all, I'm not considered a handler. I'm considered a master falconer. I hold the master falconry permit. In the state of Florida, United States government, you have to go through a two-year apprentice, 4 years as a general, and 7 years before you hold the master's permit. Now, the master's permit is what allows me to do what's called bird abatement. And before we get into what I do, I want to go over the legalities of possession of birds of prey. All birds of prey are protected by the International Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918, the Lacey Act of 1900, and the CITES Treaty, along with the Wild Bird Conservation Act. They're also protected by United States Fish and Wildlife Federal Regulation, CRF 50. They're also protected by Florida Administrative Code 68A. If you have possession of any raptor species without permitting, it's a violation of both state and federal laws. If you're convicted, it carries a $15,000 fine and 6 months in jail. Falconry and the raptors in abatement and deployed is the most highly regulated field sport in the world today. And the staff that work with me, myself and my partner, hold both those state and federal permits that allow possession and handling of all species of raptor, and we've gone through years of training to do so. In 2016, falconry was designated as an intangible cultural heritage of humanity by the United Nations Education, Science, and Cultural Organization. Falconry began at first, really, as a method of taking food, and then it evolved to be more associated with nature conservation. The cultural heritage and social engagement between countries and international communities. And now that we've gone through the legalities of what falconry is, I just had to say that and get that out of the way.
I'm glad you did.
I want people to know that this is licensed. This is all a license. This is federally licensed. This is not I can go buy it at the store. That's not the way it works. You have to be fully permitted. We are fully inspected by the state of Florida and the United States government to do this. And
Neil,
abatement. Yes, sir.
I'm glad you said this because I know Lois was thinking of scrapping what she does for a living, getting a falcon, and starting this business. So this is good that you've straightened her out, that she just can't run out and get a falcon and start scaring away birds. Good, you told us.
You can't. And you also have to have a Class 3 wildlife exhibition license by the state of Florida. And most businesses, you must also have a $2.5 million blanket liability policy as well. So we are incorporated. We've been incorporated for 5 years. And it is called Wingover Incorporated. And basically what we do, Wingover Incorporated uses falconry for its bird control and abatement. It's a natural technique that's part of the balance of nature. It's chemical-free, it's non-polluting, and falconry really works, and abatement works because pest birds are born to be extremely terrified of raptors, falcons, and hawks, which are their natural enemy. That's a millennium-old fear that we're concentrating on, that we're because of the falcon's flight, because of the presence, and a few other non-destructive, non-lethal things we do, we actually train the birds, the pest species, that they can no longer live here, they can no longer drink on your property, they can no longer nest on your property, because now we have big boy falcons and hawks. Now, Chop is not the only member of our team. We have 12 members of our team, and depending on, that's feathered members, of course, depending on our site, some of our sites we use hawks, some of our sites we use falcons, and some of our sites we use owls, depending on the bird. Different species are more afraid of different species.
Let me interrupt for 1 second. So that listeners have a better idea. So when you get to the property, you just hold out the bird. He flaps his wings. You crack a whip and makes him flap his wings. But he doesn't fly around the property. He stays on you.
Not at this one. We use different methodologies for where we're at, for agriculture, landfills, resorts, homes. It all depends. Now, since we have a falcon and we're out close to these buildings, we won't let the falcon go there because, heck, she takes a half a mile to turn around. And just in the chance that she should catch something, which doesn't occur, she can, mind you, and takes it up to the top of the next building, I have to go talk to that building manager to go to the top of that thing to get my falcon. Okay? If I go to a football field or to a entertainment venue such as, I've been out to the Miami Marlin Stadium, I can actually fly my smaller falcon inside of there to get rid of the pigeons. But at a boat dock where there's a lot of boats, because I do go to Coral Gables and sometimes do the boat docks, I will actually fly the hawks from boat to boat to boat. When I'm in a hangar, I'll use an owl. I'll make a one-way door. There's a lot of pigeons in some of these hangars that poop on the planes. So I'll make a one-way door in the door of the hangar, and I'll turn the lights off, come in at night when the pigeons are sleeping, turn on the red light, and cut loose the owl. And you've never seen 50 or 100 pigeons try to get out of a hangar in your life when there's an owl flying around. So different situations call for different animals, for different birds. And we can't, some of these sites like landfills, I have to stay all day. Well, I can't fly one bird 8 hours out of the day, so I have to rotate between several birds. And depending whether I find seagulls, grackles, crows, or other birds of prey at these sites depends very much on what I'm going to use. So I actually have to go to the site. That's why you see us there first. We just don't quote you. We come out. We have to see exactly what you have, see if they're nesting, see if they're in the trees, what time of day they come in, how they're feeding. It's a several-step process before we can do it, before we do our abatement on golf courses, hotels, coastal resorts, and boat docks. I mean,
Before we go any further, can you explain to our audience what the assignment is? Why do you show up at these sites? What is the objective of what you do?
The objective is to put the falcon or hawk or bird of prey in front of the pest species so they, of course, scare the birds of prey away. The permit is not to kill. Our permit, abatement permit, is only to haze and harass the nuisance species. That's all it's for. The species we're trying to scare away, the seagull, the grackle, the crow, they're all regulated under the Migratory Bird Treaty, which protects my falcon. So we can't go out and kill them. That's not the point. The point is to scare them away.
And what's interesting, by them seeing it, they are scared away. Obviously, in that moment, they're scared away. But yet, then they don't come back. You'd think, 2 hours later, you're gone. Why didn't the bird come back? Okay, well, the hawk's
sometimes
away.
Sometimes they do. Remember, this is a progressive. This is done in stages. It all depends, like I told you, it all depends on your site. I've been going to sites for 2 years now, some sites, because they've had 20,000 birds come in. And just because I get rid of that first flock of 100 and they go down the road, another set of birds that have never seen my hawks and falcons or never know what is at this site will come in and say, oh, look, there's a pool. There's some trees. No other birds are there. We don't have to fight the other flock to get in. There's
right.
There's no watcher male there that can harass us. So we're going to come in and hang out this site and we'll have to come back. They just don't, they all, sometimes they have a schedule. They actually have a route that they go. Sometimes they don't go to the same place every day unless they're roosting. And
right.
sometimes you'll scare them away 2 days in a row, two times in a row. And the next week they'll come back just to check and see if the bird of prey isn't there. If the bird of prey isn't there, they'll call in the other flock to come in. So sometimes it takes two or three times to come. Other properties, they have me there for regular maintenance. I'll come there once and twice a week because I have a 5-acre site. I'll have five buildings or six buildings in a campus with hangars. With something that has 40 or 50 acres, I'm in a car going from one end to the other. So you
mm-hmm.
can't cover the whole area with one bird. And the site are as different as night and day.
It's very important right now that you tell our audience what's happening, because most of the people that listen to us are all over the country. They're unaware of this bird infestation or whatever you want to call it. You correct me. So please tell them what's going on and why you're so important.
Okay. Well, what it is that... as urbanization occurs, especially in the Miami area at large and other places, especially on the coast, that was a natural migratory path. East coast of Florida is a natural migratory path. As the weather changes, just like the fall equinox in September, the birds naturally signal to come to migrate from the north to the south. Because Miami is on that natural pathway, the birds influx. You get birds here that are not residential birds. You get birds by the hundreds and thousands that migrate down the East Coast looking for food, looking for places to stay. And just like people do, just like we get snowbirds, the birds come in by the thousands and they inhabit the places that were once covered with trees. They now have parks. They now have buildings which have pools. They don't care what they find as long as there's food there. And also, people also serve food poolside, french fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, whatever you have, popcorn. So the birds come in and actually take the food out of the plate and out of the hands of the people that are there. They defecate on the umbrellas. They drink in the pool. They defecate in the pools. And they make the site totally undesirable that you've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to own or to go there for the weekend and have a good time. And now your child is having a bag of french fries, some french fries, and a seagull comes down and grabs the fries. And now the company that's there has to comp your entire lunch, $30, $40, $50 lunch. They do that. I had one site that was losing $425 a day in comp meals because birds were coming in and taking food. And they were doing that 5 and 6 times. They were doing it 5 days out of the week because they were busy 5 days out of the week.
Right.
Not Monday and Tuesday so much, but the weekend. So that all added up. When they added up the figures, it cost them a quarter of the money to pay us to come out and get rid of these birds. And while we're there, we do a little PR. People say, oh, what's that bird? And we get to talk to them. And the birds don't come down. So in the bottom line, it comes to we're saving the client money. And we're also making these birds go off the property away so they don't bother their guests. And that's basically what it is.
And I can say with our building, the biggest problem, you kind of mentioned it quickly, isn't just stealing the food. But these birds, when they come here, they poop there. So we've got all this bird poop on our deck and in the pool and on our railings. And it's a nasty hassle. And then the staff of the building have to start cleaning up the pool. And we're just fishing line all over the place and all those things, which slows it down a little bit. But we still have a huge problem, and that's why we turn to Neil and Top.
Okay. Besides the nuisance of just cleaning up, the feces turns to powder. And this powder you can inhale, especially with pigeons and other birds too. It also eats the concrete up. If you inhale this powder, there is actually, it's called pigeon disease, pigeon keeper's disease. It, you can get certain diseases like this trichinoma.
Lung abscesses.
There's a lot of things that, that it causes. There are several diseases that it can lead to, especially in people who have some sort of immune deficiency or young children. You know, it's easier to get colds. It's just a, it's just not good. Let's say that, shall we?
Right.
It's not healthy at all.
And I should also point out that this is, I mean, I was happy to hear that things like Brickell City Center, which is a big mall, and the Four Seasons, and you said Marlin Stadium, really established buildings and iconic
a lot of
in South Florida hire you. So this is a real solution.
This is a, now, they do this out at JFK Stadium, JFK Airport in New York as well. You'll find several other people do this. Remember, matter of fact, Wembley Stadium has a hawk there named Rufus that's been there for 14 years. So, and they were having trouble with pigeons out on the field when they were trying to play tennis. So it's been around a long time.
So how many people are there like you?
In the state of Florida, falconers, master falconers?
No, I would say all over the country. People that, you know, work, you know, like you do to save, you know, buildings and recreation areas.
Right.
I use the wrong word, prevent, you know, destruction of these areas.
That work abatement, there are a lot of companies out there that work abatement. But I really couldn't come up with a figure of how many people are out there physically. I know there's about 5,000 falconers in the United States. There are 142 falconers in Florida. Not all of them hold the master's permit. Not all of them hold the abatement permit. There are a couple of companies in Florida that do run abatement. Mm-hmm. But in this area, we're one of the two companies that run it, that provide abatement services.
What is the strangest assignment you've ever had, or the most unique?
The strangest assignment?
Or something that's novel that, you know, that since we interviewed you, you should really tell us about.
I would say the buzzards are the, I went and they had a buzzard trapped. I'm not going to say what place it was. It was a high rise. It has a buzzard trapped on the high rise because it had a piece of line grabbed on its leg, fishing line, and it got hooked around one of their poles. So I actually had to go up. They called me, and I do the rescues free of charge. I don't charge anything for that. I had to go grab the turkey vulture. The thing about turkey vultures, I know it's going to sound gross, is that they use vomiting as a defense.
No, gosh.
So when I went up there, the people asked me why I was dressed in white and had a rebreather on, and they were all standing around me, and I warned them to get out of the way. But as soon as I grabbed the vulture, it vomited all over me and vomited down where they were. It got so bad that the three people that were watching me also vomited.
Oh God.
This sounds like one of the episodes of Two and a Half Men.
Yeah,
where everybody was vomiting.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Did anybody get this on video, Neil?
No, everybody was vomiting.
Excuse me while I vomit now. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of hard to hold your iPhone while you're vomiting.
Right,
no,
exactly.
No. Oh gosh.
And who wants pictures of them in that sort of predicament?
Oh my goodness gracious. So go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, I've been around an awfully long time sometimes, and I've met a lot of interesting people just being a TV news reporter and whatnot, but I have to say, Neil was my first falconer, and it was absolutely, I was like, wow, I didn't even know this job existed. So it's so fascinating to learn about. That's why I wanted to share it with our listeners here on Lying on the Beach. What were you going to say, Lois? I'm sorry.
I would like to know how Neil got involved in this business.
Great question.
Well, we got to go first. You got to ask about falconry. Well, I was first smitten by falconry by watching a Walt Disney show.
Oh.
They had a show on archery, and they said, besides archery, there is falconry. And then, of course, I read My Side of the Mountain, and Gene Craighead George. It's an excellent book. If you have small children, I would, and they like wildlife and birds, I would definitely read that to them as well. And then I didn't get into falconry until age 45. I'm 63 now. And I had always wanted to do falconry, and I started to do it when I got married at 27, but my path led to fatherhood, not to falconry. So once my children became old enough, I got my permits, started out with my first bird, which is a red tail that you must trap, and then from there, I started to do just regular falconry. Only 5 years ago did I start doing abatement. Because, well, I had a pest control company call me out of the blue because another falconer had recommended me and that I had birds that would be good for abatement, and he didn't have any birds that would be good for abatement. And that started it off. Then I had the idea, and then we grew by leaps and bounds. We had one customer, two customers, and then we met the gentleman who I don't know if I want to use his name or not. Anyway, he was one of the directors of the Brickell City Center, and he had a Porsche outside the building, and it got pooped on by about 1,000 birds, and he wasn't too happy about it. I was doing an entertainment gig, and he saw the bird of prey, and he said, "What's that for?" And I told him, and he called me, and I gave him an estimate, and I started doing the Brickell City Center, and then the door just opened wide up.
Wow. Was your wife in favor of the transition at four or whatever age it was to this career? Was she encouraging encouraging?
No. she has only in the past several years has she's always accepted what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And I mean, she's after 36 years, you have to be accepting of each other. We support each other in whatever we wish to do. Matter of fact, she slings paint, is what she calls it. She paints with acrylics.
Okay.
And that doesn't interest me at all. And she does some beautiful paintings. She has nothing to do with the birds. She tolerates the birds. And
where are they housed? Where are they housed?
When it comes to housing, that is regulated also by the state of Florida and United States government. They are housed at my domicile, and you have to have an 8x8x8 wooden structure, correctly perched with sand. It has to be drained. This is all laid out in the specific rules and regulations. When I was telling you about, falconry is one of the most regulated field sports in the world today. So. And then, of course, you know, I have a vet on call because they do get sick just like people. I have a microscope here so I can do fecal samples because they can't tell me whether or not they're sick. I actually have to look at their fecal matter, and that tells me just by their posture, their throat. If I see anything unusual, then I do a fecal sample and see if there's anything biologically that I can take care of. If not, I have to take them to the doctor and we'll run a blood test or we have a lot of trouble here with a thing called aspergillosis and trichinoma. Aspergillosis is a fungal disease because it's all wet and there's always mold and fungus everywhere. Birds are susceptible to that. And then, of course, with their food, they're eating wild game and they're eating food that has been shipped in from a game farm. Because there are times when they can't eat wild food. So there's always the risk of contamination there. So you have to be fairly careful. These birds are weighed and logged every day. That's how we know they're healthy. And go ahead, please.
Okay, and a good lesson for our listeners is that you, even if you're not a falcon, it's good to check your poop. So I think that was very,
I think that's a very, very good idea.
Yeah.
You should always be good. Now, how about a few other things about bird abatement control. How about
okay.
that?
Okay. What do you got?
When you have an abatement problem, say you're a business owner and you might be thinking about hiring us, and you're thinking, what's my concern with bird issues? Well, when you have bird issues, they affect your image as a store owner or as a property owner. They damage the structure and customers' vehicles. I'm sure you get customer complaints about poop all over the vehicles all the time. At least that's the thing. And they're a serious health risk to humans. They could clog your gutters when they're nesting. They could damage your inventory from bird dropping. They could go into piping for heaters or air conditioning and start a fire and exhaust flues. And, you know, of course, you mentioned that they have to do, there's a maintenance cost keeping the bird mess every
Absolutely.
Day for a week or a month. Not to mention, it's a legacious society we live in. I guess that's the word. They sue a lot of
yeah.
people. Your client slipping on droppings can result in a lawsuit. And you
mentioned image, like Nordstrom's here in New York City, a brand new building, $500 million, beautiful building. But just before opening day, it was covered in pigeon poop. And so right before opening day, they brought a team of power washers and scrubbers just to clean it up. And by the way, a couple of days later, there was more poop back. But they could use your services. You should contact them. But the truth is that it made the place look really sleazy until they cleaned it off. I mean, you don't want to walk into a new building that's covered in pigeon poop. So I think there's definitely that side of it besides the health side as well.
Well, there is a lot of clients ask, well, why my property? And I tell them, again, like I told you earlier, it's on the migration route. It's all about what's there. And their creatures are habit. If they've been breeding in that area for 20 years and your building just went up 5 years ago, guess what? They're going to be in that area. They
right.
perform the same routine every day with a few exceptions. They feed at one location, they roost in another location, and they do the brown chicken, brown cow at another location. So they congregate where their food, where they roost and nest, and be protected from the weather and any other potential threats like humans, cats, dogs. And of course, we have to come there is we have to determine what it will take to resolve their bird problem. And there's a solution, but every site is a challenge. Everybody's different. They have a roof and an overhang. You have a pool. Some people say, well, how about the bobbing owls? Well, yes, you can install bobbing owls, but they won't do a damn thing for you. They'll probably go about 2 or 3 days, and that'll be it. We can do spikes, but remember, you put spikes on ledges to keep pigeons and other birds off, you've only covered one area. You can't put it on a railing because you have guests to go out and hold the railing,
right.
and there are spikes. You can't do exclusion redding, you know. There's things you can do for, you can bird-proof your chimney with daddy long legs, rain gutters with special rain sites. The list goes on and on. And like I said, the trapping, then you have to, if you trap these birds, you have to have a special permit in order to trap these birds and take them away. And then, of course, they have to be gassed afterwards. And it's the client has to apply for this special depredation permit, and they have to really prove to the government that you've got thousands of birds coming in and destroying your property, destroying your crops. Normally, depredation permits are for farmers who have a cash crop that birds by the thousand are coming up and destroying. So, the birds can spread like 60 diseases to humans and animals. You know, you should avoid the dust and spores from the feces. The feces can be brought into their buildings with intake fans, air conditioners, the dust blowing in the windows and doors, and
right.
the residents tracking in contaminants to your building.
Right,
they also track rats, fleas, ticks, mites. Pigeons are referred to as flying rats for good reason. I own pigeons myself. I love pigeons. Wherever possible for pigeons' properties, I trap them and take them to a special pigeon handler who raises them and keeps them, and as much as possible. And he loves it when I bring him pigeons. So,
and I have to tell people who aren't living this experience like I have in South Florida, you know, one or two birds are beautiful. Everybody loves birds. But when you have thousands of them or hundreds of them on your railing, you feel like you're in an Alfred Hitchcock movie. And all of a sudden, it becomes very threatening. You realize, they're way outnumbering us. And you can feel that balance of power shifting. And it's a scary feeling. So that's why we call the Falconer in, and this is why I recommend it. By the way, while I have this moment, I'm going to tell people your website is wingoverinc.com is your website, and they can find you on Instagram at wingoverinc. So hopefully
correct.
You'll folks who are having the same bird invasion issue will seek you out and will use Chop or one of your other birds to come to a rescue and stop the bird invasion. Lois, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I think this is a great way, a great place to end. It's been absolutely delightful, fascinating, and I would expect that we have great audience participation in contacting us after this episode.
I feel the same way. Neil, do you have anything else you want to add? Or
yes, we also have Wingover Incorporated is the bird abatement side. We have another side, that's the parent company. Our other company is Raptors of the Round Table. Now, mm-hmm. Raptors of the Round Table does medieval recreation, educational presentation, and educational venues. And that is Raptors of the Round Table with an S, raptorsoftheroundtable.com. We help the public at large to learn about the rich history of falconry and raptorial species, their care, welfare, and training. We promote conservation of the birds of prey and appreciate their value in a natural wildlife conservation program. We like to maintain falconry as a legal field sport and continue the traditions which will aid, perpetuate, and further the welfare of falconry and the raptors it employs. This weekend, Saturday and Sunday, I will be at the Camelot Days Medieval Festival in PY Park, and you're very welcome to come out and see all 12 of the birds of prey.
Very cool.
Thank you.
Neil, thank you for all that information. We really appreciate it. And on that note,
a little bit more than you had a plan, I'm sure.
No, it was very good. You did a terrific job, and I don't think our listeners expect to hear from a falconer. Now they have, so I'm thrilled that we could bring it to them. So once again, I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess,
and we have been Lying on the Beach. So long, everybody.